Talo Falava, I'm Sosef Womoli. Join me for Sister Sounds, a music show dedicated to showcasing the breadth of talented female musicians and performers from across the Pacific. Sister Sounds will bring you amazing local talent mixed with the sounds and vibe our Islander audiences love by artists from across the seas as well. Search up ABC Sister Sounds to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Bon dia, half a day, hello Lingita, and a good morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Coming up on the show, Tuvalu leaders shared their disappointment over China's recent missile test in the Pacific. Residents in Samoa say compensation from the sinking of a naval ship is not enough. And did you catch the finals of the State of Origin? That's right, New South Wales took the win. All that and more shortly. Our show comes to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. I say tagetumas. Thank you for your time. This is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific. Firstly, Tuvalu's leaders say they are gravely concerned about a Chinese missile test that landed in waters near the small Pacific nation. In a statement on Facebook, Tuvalu's Prime Minister, Fileti Teo, says he joins the call for superpowers to refrain from using the Pacific Ocean as a testing ground for their military arsenal. China launched a nuclear-capable missile over the Pacific on Monday, landing in the ocean closest to the exclusive economic zones of Tuvalu and Kiribati. Former Prime Minister and current MP Inele Sopoanga has condemned the attack, saying he wants it escalated to the United Nations Security Council.
I saw it on the news through TV New Zealand. It was really very scary and frightening and very, very concerning to me. And I think as leaders of Tuvalu, we must be right there at the forefront to condemn. And I strongly condemn these actions.
Of course, Tuvalu is an ally of Taiwan. You've said there that you strongly condemn what's happened. Do you have any message for China about this missile test that's happened?
I think they should really go back to observing the United Nations Charter on peace and security. They cannot simply play around with their games or flying missiles to anywhere they want. I mean, this is a matter of deep concern for me that we are breaking international law. We are ignoring the call by the United Nations Charter. All these actions are uncalled for and should be strongly condemned. And I think it's a matter that should be taken up to the United Nations Security Council right now. For a permanent member of the Security Council to show some power, misuse of power against the most vulnerable member of the United Nations, it should be strongly condemned.
You mentioned that you would be looking to perhaps put pressure for some actions from the UN Security Council. Are you able to elaborate on what steps you would like to take?
I think Tuvalu, as a member of the United Nations, has every right to make a submission to the United Nations Secretary General and call for intervention and an urgent assessment of the Security Council on this measure. There are certainly protocols to be observed, but I'm sure as a member of the United Nations, we can certainly approach this either on Tuvalu's own behalf, or also through collective submission by the Pacific Island countries. I think the Pacific Islands Leaders Forum should take up a role in this and cannot remain silent. They cannot remain silent as the highest political grouping in the Pacific. And I think we should stand together in solidarity and make a strong appeal and submission to the United Nations. And I certainly hope leaders in Tuvalu and the Pacific would take this up.
And what have you heard about how people in Tuvalu are feeling about this right now?
You know, tell you what, the social media is full of the reactions of the Tuvalu people. You know, very scary. And especially when they know, they found out, I don't know how, that the missiles, of course, were dropped in waters nearby, but maybe not directly inside the Tuvalu EEZ. This is most concerning, very, very concerning to the people of Tuvalu.
And that is Tuvalu MP Nele Sopoanga speaking to reporter Jordan Fennell. Now, Papua New Guinea's Foreign Minister, Justin Kachinko, says he's expressed his disappointment with China over its missile test into the Pacific, calling it a wrong calculation by the superpower. He says China's ambassador to PNG gave a two-hour notice before Monday's missile launch, which coincided with Fiji and Australia signing a new defence pact. Mr. Kachinko believes the test has only strengthened resolve among Pacific leaders. It comes as the Puk Puk Treaty, the defence pact between PNG and Australia, formally comes into force, with Prime Ministers James Marape and Anthony Albanese meeting in Brisbane yesterday to mark the occasion. Mr. Kachinko spoke with Natasha Emick.
So that was a fairly disappointing situation. I did raise to the Chinese ambassador my disappointment and concern, saying this went against the Rarotonga Treaty. And also that Australia and New Zealand and the world and would definitely be totally against what was done. It surprises me how the missile was launched into the South Pacific because, you know, we're a peace-loving countries. We do not offend or, you know, cause problems to other countries in the world. So when the missile flew over Philippines and then landed between Tuvalu and Nauru and just near Solomon Islands as well, you know, what's going on? You know, why, these countries can't even defend themselves. They're little tiny atolls that have a minimal amount of population. And not only that, they have no defense mechanisms to defend themselves at all if anything does happen. I just can't understand the stupidity of it all. For the missile being fired at this time as well, it brings a stronger resolve, I believe, between all our Pacific Island leaders and Australia and New Zealand in this regard. I think you'll see them unite even stronger, and it'll be interesting. I believe there will be a strong statement come out from PIF, from the Pacific Islands Forum, where they're looking at having all leaders sign a very important document against what has happened.
So if the intention was to intimidate, you think it's had the counter effect then?
Oh, I totally believe so. I don't think anybody would put up with this at all. Why would you? Why would you? You see, you know, Pacific Islanders as well, they're all leaders in their own right. They're strong people, robust people. They're survivors. They're fighters. Why would they cringe to something like this? I would definitely say it would be against China in respect to what they have done. They've made a wrong calculation. If it's to scare Australia or if it's to scare United States or whatever, that are, you know, bringing us all together as one big family, one big security nation in that respect, it's done the opposite.
What's the implication on PNG's own security after this test?
Well, we have always kept to our traditional security partners. We've done this since I've been foreign minister, with the DCA signed, with the United States, with the bilateral security agreement and the Puk Puk Treaty, which has been signed into force today. We've signed up with the DCA and that with the Indonesian government and so on, with all our other shipwriters' agreements and SOFAs as well with England and France. So Papua New Guinea is very comfortable knowing that we have our allies, our strong security partners with us, so that we are protected in one way or another if ever we are put into a situation where we need help.
The PNG Prime Minister's trip down to Brisbane to see the Puk Puk Treaty officially come into force has coincided with Australia announcing $250 million for grassroots rugby in the Pacific. That's not just PNG, that's also Samoa, Tonga and Fiji. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Tonga and Samoan prime ministers are there with our prime minister, I believe. That's more for their rugby union situation that they've committed to Samoa and to Tonga. Our deal was done a couple of years ago, as you know, and it's being implemented as we speak. Through sports diplomacy, it's going to make a huge, massive situation for our country, for Australia, and will economically benefit not only Australia, but also Papua New Guinea in many different sectors, from our grassroots to SMEs, to transportation, to the hotel industry, tourism, you name it. It's going to be a win-win situation once 28 comes about. And we start having the games here in Papua New Guinea and also when our team first hits the ground for the NRL season in 28. So this is a 10-year investment by the Australian government and Papua New Guinea. And together we will make it work. We'll make it happen for the benefit of the sport, for the benefit of the community, and for the benefit of our people going forward as it's our national sport.
And that's PNG's Foreign Minister Justin Kajinko speaking with our reporter Natasha Emick.
Join Natasha Matin for Sisters Let's Talk, a program that explores the issues that are in the hearts and minds of Pacific women.
Cut to me landing in Tonga and showing up on my auntie's doorstep, and they had no idea I was coming. It was late at night, and they had no idea who I was. I felt the full weight of my adoption at that time.
Sisters Let's Talk, Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Manuela Taiyang, welcome back to Pacific Beat. More than 18 months after the sinking of a New Zealand naval ship in Samoan waters, residents in the area have finally begun receiving compensation. 1,100 tala has been handed out to over 8,000 residents, and that's about $560 Australian dollars each. The payments come from a package provided by the New Zealand government, but some residents feel the current compensation is not enough. ABC's Samoa reporter Adele Fruin has the story.
Tafitoala village mayor Talo Eleono Vasiso has been through more than 18 months of turmoil. The sunken Manawanui New Zealand Navy vessel has affected livelihoods and caused severe environmental impacts. And he feels the compensation is insufficient.
At this time, although the money has been received, our village is not happy. The amount given does not truly match the purpose, and the expectation was that the funds would be higher for our village. If it was 10 million, Tafitoala should have claimed 2 million, with the remaining 8 million divided among the other villages of Safata.
The October 2024 incident made global headlines with worldwide criticism of the New Zealand government's response to the sinking. Talo'ai Leono Vasiso says there will be long-term impacts. Despite this, New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon says Samoa will receive only 10 million tala in compensation, and this was endorsed by Samoa's government at the time. But Samoa's Minister for Natural Resources and Environment, Ale Vena'ale, says they are requesting an extra 4.2 million tala, or 2.2 million Australian dollars, from New Zealand to support Te Umu, a district neighbouring Safata.
It was initially only the district of Safata, but when the Marine Reserve carried out its inspection, it was found that part of the district of Te Umu was also affected. Therefore, Te Umu was included in the discussions for compensation. Right now, the respected leaders and people of the district of Te Umu are listening. We have begun preparations of signing documents for all those confirmed, 4,200 people whose livelihoods were impacted by New Zealand's vessel. Negotiations have begun with the Government of New Zealand for the provision of 4.2 million tala, or 2.2 million AUD, in compensation for Te Umu, separate from the funds allocated to Safata.
Despite the previous government signing an agreement not to seek further payments, Minister Ali urged Si'umu residents to remain patient as negotiations with New Zealand continue. He assured them that assistance will eventually be secured, though it might take time. Opposition leader Tuleepo Dr. Sailele Malilingoi criticised the government for delaying the disbursement of funds nearly 2 years after the shipwreck.
First, accounts must be created. Remember, when making accounts, you need to bring birth certificates. And it takes time, which means it could go up to 5 years. And let's say these documents are hard to obtain. It can drag and be postponed again and again.
But Prime Minister Lau Lilmalia-Dorbladevofosi-Schmidt has dismissed those concerns. He says the delay for Safata compensation was caused by higher than expected population numbers and the time needed to collect residents' bank account details. Back in Safata, the Tawhitoa chief says that the rise in population numbers and the associated complication has come from people living outside the district, particularly in urban areas.
As it stands, some of our families only have two or three members, so they receive their 1,100, but others registered their families with eight or nine, yet that money goes to them staying in Apia, while our people are struggling alone.
Despite what the government's position, he says they will continue seeking assistance to secure the compensation they rightfully deserve.
And that was ABC's reporter in Samoa, Adele Frewin.
Pacific Beat.
Now, prominent human rights researcher says the killing of an American pilot by separatists in West Papua has undermined their campaign to become independent from Indonesia. Nicholas Gosselin was flying for a private charter company when he was attacked and killed by members of the West Papua National Liberation Army. Andreas Hassono is a researcher with the Human Rights Watch and has investigated human rights abuse by separatists and the Indonesian military. He says the use of violence by both sides of the conflict must be condemned by everyone.
I did not buy the argument that he was bringing Indonesian troops, at least during that particular flight to Yahukimo. I condemn the killing. I don't think the West Papua National Liberation Army or that particular commander, because they are very decentralized, is right in attacking and fatally shot this young American pilot.
Do you think this undermines independence efforts? Do you think it discredits the independence movement?
Yes. It is discrediting the independent movement in West Papua. Because, again, any movement, not only independence movement, human rights, LGBT rights, the best, the most effective history has taught me is non-violent movement. Violence will be jeopardized by violence. So it is discrediting the independence movement in West Papua.
Human rights abuses against West Papuan civilians is well documented, and the human rights agencies have consistently expressed concerns around that.
Yeah.
But we're also hearing about atrocities committed against Indonesian civilians by separatists in West Papua, right?
Yes.
The killing of minors and even West Papuan natives. There was a female activist. She was filmed being executed.
Yes.
This is a problem, right?
It is. It is a problem. There are many civilians from many sides of the conflict, including indigenous Papuan civilians, including Indonesian civilians. All killings of the civilians should be condemned. Although we should also understand the disproportionate number of civilian Papuans, indigenous Papuans. They are obviously the ones that are disproportionately wounded, killed.
The escalation of violence in West Papua, it seems to be getting worse, right? We're hearing reports of an increasing military build-up and more civilian deaths. Could you give us an update on what is happening there in West Papua at the moment, the conflict?
The increase happened because the Indonesian government would like to clear nearly 3 hectares of lands, forests, and swamps, but some underused lands, especially in South Papua. They are grading the lands, they assign some companies to plan to produce so-called food and energy estate with sugarcane, palm oil, oil palm, what else? Rice field, and some other farming activities, commercial farming activities. Of course, they do not consult the indigenous Papuans, just like what they do over the last 6 decades. Papuans are not happy, of course, with more damages on top of existing problem, mining operation, other oil palm plantation in Papua. In a bid to clear this massive land, Indonesian military sent more troops from other parts of Indonesia. They also want to increase the number of military battalions in the 6 provinces in West Papua, South Central Papua, South Papua, Central Papua, Papua Highlands, West Papua, and the others. That's because of the presence of bigger military in West Papua, to the extent that the ratio, one soldier per civilian, is the highest, not only in Indonesia, in the world. In the world, the ratio is the highest in the world, one of the highest in the world. Of course, the Papuan reacted. They are already doing their so-called tribal wars, mostly using traditional weapons, spears, bows and arrows. They are also increasing the fight against Indonesian security forces. In fact, one Papuan leader in Wamena, he told me that maybe this is the end of our struggle.
And that was Andreas Hasono, a researcher for Human Rights Watch, and he was speaking there to Pacific Beat's Whenau Whanua.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
All right, a multi-million dollar partnership has been signed between Pacific Rugby League Federations and the Australian Rugby League Commission. Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese joined the leaders of Papua New Guinea, Tonga and Samoa in Brisbane for the signing yesterday. The agreement is worth $250 million and aims to strengthen rugby league across the Pacific. It's part of a broader $600 million Australian investment linked to PNG's entry into the NRL. The Pacific Rugby League partnership will be delivered by the Australian Rugby League Commission alongside the National Federations of Papua New Guinea, Tonga, Samoa and Fiji. PNG Prime Minister James Manape paid tribute to Australia's support for rugby league in the region.
I pay my special respect to Prime Minister Albanese and your vision and your step up in leadership in embracing not just PNG but the Pacific. For this embrace of PNG would be in vain if Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, Niue, Cook Island, the Micronesian brothers and sisters, the Greater Melanesia are not part of the fray, then our PNG-Australia relationship is in vain. I look at the fragility happening in all parts of Earth today, the Middle East fragility, the European fragility, and what is the future we're carving out for our Pacific Island children. They must live in peace, they must live in security, they must play, do business, transact in total knowledge that their future is secure. And today is about securing the future of our children. They must enjoy the ambience of life we have in sport, has the ability to pull culture and people together. And I want to appreciate the leadership that Rugby League is doing to Australian Rugby League, to PNG Rugby League, to Samoa Rugby League, to Tonga Rugby League, to Fiji Rugby League, and also to the rest of the sporting fraternities. Let's come together as people of one sea.
And that was PNG Prime Minister James Marape speaking at the signing of the Pacific Rugby League Partnership. Meanwhile, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has flagged that Pacific leaders are on the verge of issuing a joint statement criticising China's ballistic missile test in the region. It comes as Albanese continues his diplomatic blitz of Pacific leaders, meeting his counterparts from Papua New Guinea, Tonga and Samoan Brisbane yesterday. Samantha Donovan spoke to ABC's foreign affairs reporter Stephen Jedgetts last night following that meeting.
Stephen, let's start with the Chinese missile launch. What's the response been from the region?
Look, quite a forceful response so far, Sam. A number of countries have come out and effectively condemned the missile launch. Now, not all countries have been equally full-throated in this. Probably the most forceful has been Matthew Wale, the Prime Minister of Solomon Islands, who said that China was a friend of Solomon Islands, but this missile launch was not the act of a friend. So pretty sharp criticism. But we've also seen Fiji's defence minister come out and be quite critical, although the government issued itself a much more cautious statement. We've seen Tuvalu, the nation which in some senses was closest to this because we believe the ICBM ploughed into waters just outside Tuvalu's exclusive economic zone, issuing a very full-throated statement saying that they had, quote, grave and serious concern and disappointment over the launch. Now, this morning, Anthony Albanese, ahead of these meetings with Pacific leaders, was asked about the launch and what the response from the Pacific was. And interestingly, he said that the Pacific Islands Forum, which is the peak body for all Pacific leaders, was already pulling together a statement by all Pacific Island Forum members, which he hinted would be a full-throated, or at least a fairly full-throated condemnation of what China has done here.
Look, the Pacific Island Forum, there's a draft statement, which is being going around the members of the Pacific Island Forum. It's a very strong statement. And I'm hopeful, certainly from Australia's perspective, I've made very clear comments, public comments, but we're hoping as well that the nations of the Pacific join together to send a strong message.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. And Stephen, what else do you think would have been on the agenda for the meetings of the Pacific Island leaders today?
Look, there would have been plenty, but I'll just pick out two because they're very current at the moment. Of course, Anthony Albanese was in Fiji just on Monday announcing a new alliance with Fiji, the Ocean of Peace Alliance. One of the elements that's so fascinating about this treaty is that it's actually open to other Pacific nations to join. That is a step that, you know, now PNG and Fiji have both taken, striking formal military alliances with Australia or defence alliances. Something that no one would have predicted even a few years ago. And now the question is, will other nations, presumably those with militaries, potentially look to join up in the future? Now, at the top of that list, probably PNG and Tonga, as well as New Zealand, because they're the three countries that really maintain standing militaries in the region. So I think it's all but certain, let's put it that way, that Prime Minister Anthony Albanese would have raised this prospect with both PNG and Tonga in the meeting today. One other thing that I think would also have been almost certainly discussed was just broader questions around climate change and COP. COP being, of course, Sam, the conference of the parties, the main multilateral climate change meeting hosted under UN auspices every year. We've got Fiji preparing now to host a pre-COP meeting. Australia now holding the presidency of negotiations. I imagine that Pacific nations would have urged Australia in this meeting to do everything possible to push the global community to act as quickly as possible. You know, some Pacific nations have joined with smaller island states pushing for a phase out of fossil fuel exports. That's a difficult one for Australia, of course, but it's always on the Pacific agenda.
And Stephen, you're in Brisbane. Of course, the big State of Origin final is on there tonight. And I understand rugby has also been a topic of discussion at the meeting.
It is the Pacific, Sam. So rugby, whether that's rugby league or rugby union, is always high on the agenda. And unsurprisingly, the fact that you've got four Pacific leaders or three Pacific leaders and Anthony Albanese in Brisbane, let's put it this way. I don't think it's a coincidence that they're here on Origin night and all four leaders will gather together at the decider in Lang Park tonight, something that I'm sure Australian officials always were plotting out from the beginning, perhaps. But look, there was one other element just worth touching on. Australia, you might remember when we announced the $600 million plan for an NRL team in Papua New Guinea, made it clear that a big chunk of that money, more than $200 million, would go not to the elite team, but to grassroots development programs on rugby league, using league to try and drive health and education outcomes in particular in these countries. This afternoon at a function in a Brisbane hotel, all three leaders joined Anthony Albanese to say that they've now reached an agreement on how that money will be rolled out. And clearly, all those countries represented today are hoping that league can be something of a circuit breaker when it comes to tackling some of those wicked development problems across Pacific nations.
And that was ABC's Foreign Affairs reporter, Stephen Jedgetts. With 10 big screens set up around Papua New Guinea's capital, city of Port Moresby, hundreds gathered to watch a not-to-miss State of Origin decider. Any State of Origin decider in PNG means everything stops and all eyes are up on the screen. But the poor performance by the Maroons saw Queensland supporters quietly leaving the venue in the second half. The ABC's roving reporter in PNG caught up with some of the league fans in the capital last night.
This is Belinda Cora reporting to you live from the Unagi Oval here in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea, where Game 3 has just concluded. We have some disappointed Maroonies fans, and we also have some very, very happy Blues New South Wales fans who left the Oval to go back home. Security was good, and we had a lot of our city residents gather here at the Unagi Oval to watch the match on the big screen provided by NCDC Governor Poes Pakop and his office. It is time where all the taxi drivers take a break. It is when fellowship meetings also take a shorter curve to ending it quickly. And you also have families who actually put out big screens also tonight here in the capital city. And we now cross over to some of our supporters who also turned up tonight and hear what they thought about the match.
My favorite player is Nathan Cleary and James Tedesco. I was expecting them to win because second game, the Maroons, they won the second game and they were overexcited and they thought they'll win the final game. But we Blues, we really made it tonight and I'm very happy they won this game. And we are looking forward to next year's State of Origin. Hopefully we'll win next year's game as well. As a Blues supporter, thanks Maroons for your good support. We hope you'll come out next year and keep supporting Maroons, but we'll still win the game next year again.
Okay, and, go the Blues!
Not really happy. I was definitely disappointed by the game, but after all, it was a good game. Tried our best, but we lost. But anyways, we've got next year to go on, so up the Maroons yet. We still got this.
Unfortunately, no. I went for Maroons, so very disappointed, but I guess there's always next year. The game was really intense, but I think everybody played well, and I mean, it sucks that we lost, but it's okay, I guess.
Tonight, the Blues, they played very tremendously well. I reckon they're the best team so far, and thanks to the Maroon supporters putting up a good fight. Hopefully you guys come better next year, but this year, go the Blues.
And also our fans here in Port Moresby who are supporting the State of Origin Game 3 2026 here. I'm Belinda Cora reporting for Pacific Beat.
As you heard, that was our PNG reporter, Belinda Cora. Well, another State of Origin series, as you've heard, is in the books of Blues beating the Maroons 30-12 at a sold-out Lang Park in Brisbane. Among the notable Pacific Islander additions for the decider were Samoan internationals Stephen Crichton for the Blues and Jeremiah Nanai for the Maroons. Absent, however, was the injured Api Koroi Sau, as well as Brian To'o and Kotoni Staggs, who were dropped by New South Wales coach Laurie Daly. But Whenau Whanua spoke to Melbourne Storm Premiership player and now a board member with the PNG Chiefs, Marcus By.
Were you surprised by the results?
Yeah, very surprised. But I mean, the game, obviously watching the game, Queensland had the chances, but they made too many mistakes. Those mistakes are really deadly for them, and Nisha had the pressure, and yeah, they obviously come away with those two tries from Nathan Cleary was, you know, I mean, they, Queensland still, you know, been underperformance in terms of the opportunities were there, and they dropped too many. Well, obviously they made too many mistakes, and instead of origin like that, you know. And I've never played one, but we can all see the pressure started to mount in the first half, and they did well to hold on 4-18, those big games like that, it's never easy to. And then the start of the second half, they obviously made a mistake. The second one made a mistake again, and they were under the pump all through the game, to be honest. And Nishatos played well to really deserve to win the game.
Jeremiah Nanai returned for the Maroons. He was great under the high ball. Was that part of the reason why To'o was dropped, do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously, when you look at the last two games, you know, the high balls were caught by the, you know, the Titans player. So that sort of closes up the signal, and Lichard was done well to be able to get the young Dolphins player to get up there just to match it up, and you know, it went well for them. And obviously, you know, Billy will. I thought Queensland played well, but they made so many mistakes that those mistakes will not allow you to dominate the territory. And Nishatos did it last night. They did really well, to be honest, and took the chances. And you know, Nathan with his it's a lot of slippery, and the players knows that all through the week with rain and. They came to Queensland wanting it more than the Queenslanders.
The three leaders will sign agreements on how they'll spend around $200 million allocated for grassroots rugby league. How would you like to see that money spent?
I would love to see the money spent right in our villages, in our countries, right in the villages to the. For Tonga, Samoa, and Papua New Guinea, and the two or three other Pacific countries, looking at Papua New Guinea itself, and I work in the mine site where it is away from Moresby. It's about probably an hour, 10 minutes on the plane, and the amount of young players, the young boys and young girls interested in rugby league here in Papua New Guinea is just unbelievable. But you know, PNG Rugby League, Rugby Football League is doing well in terms of trying to run those mini mode and the mode. But that kind of money going to the Pacific Islands is you will see young men and young girls, young boys and young girls generating the amount of rugby league. Advertise in the Pacific is just unbelievable. That money must be spent. To me, as an ex-player and been working in PNG since 2009 in the local areas in the mine site, that money must be spent right in the districts, right in the villages, because that is the core of the future of the game is. Where some of us, like for myself and for Justin Olam from Papua New Guinea, we didn't come from Moresby. We come from the islands right outside Port Moresby, where rugby league is, you know, is seen and kids starts superstars from Australia and New Zealand and England, where they come to Port Moresby. We never see those people, but we are the ones that work hard and want to be playing for the Kumuls.
And that's former Melbourne Storm Premiership player, now board member of PNG Chiefs, Marcus Bai. Finally, the coastal people of Merap in PNG's Madang province have celebrated the return of the leatherback turtle some 5 years after the last one visited their shores. Merap ward member Joseph Yamai says community members watched over the turtle last weekend until it laid its eggs and returned to sea.
veg and how they come to nest and how, when do they come, and we do that type of awareness and about not throwing plastics into the sea, because this they are like jellyfish and turtle, we eat them and we spoil them.
What is the significance of the leatherback turtle to your community? Do you use it for food, or do people sell it?
Oh, we don't sell turtle. We use it for food, mainly protein. And the eggs also we use, eat them.
Okay. And is there a concern about the number of leatherback turtles coming to shore in your community lately?
Yes, there is a concern. That's why we have to release that female leatherback into the sea again. Long time we see many turtles come for nesting at our beach, but some years now we see that the number is declining. And that one that we released, it took about 5 years, and that one came back to our beach to lay eggs. That's why we see that the number of turtles is declining very fast. That's why we started to conserve them.
What do you think is the cause of this decline in leatherback turtle in your community?
We kill them and eat them, and because of the eggs do not hatch because of the temperature and people using the beach, making fires and all this. And the other thing is the climate change is affecting the turtle nesting areas.
And you said after 5 years there was a leatherback turtle that came to shore in your community. That must have been pretty special for you and your community.
Yeah, it was a special day. That's why we didn't release it in the night. We left it so that small children can come and see it, take photos. Then we have to release it with a bit excitement. It will come again to our beach and we release it. I see.
Just 5 years is quite a long time to wait for the leatherback turtle to come to shore.
Yes.
Is that sort of a big a longer time to wait, and it's totally different from what you're used to before?
Yes. Before, it becomes around night or daytime, and becomes 2 weeks or 3 weeks every night. And it's a long way to see a turtle come again to our shore. That's why we really, like, we are very excited to see one coming to our shore again. We had to conserve this leatherback and other marine species because in the near future, our children won't see them real, like physically see them and witness them, because they are gradually or rapidly declining. And we have to conserve them so that later generation, they can see them real species, not just the pictures.
And that's Joseph Yamai, member for Mid-Up Ward, speaking there to ABC's Hilda Wayne.
Want to immerse yourself in sport and the stories of athletes from across the Pacific? Well, join me, Sam Wykes, alongside some of the most talented journalists and sports commentators from across the region for Fresh Off the Field. Each week, we'll also bring you interviews with Pacific athletes leaving their mark on the international stage and those aspiring to do the same. From cricket to netball, athletics to football, and everything in between. Fresh Off the Field, Thursdays at 4 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here in the Pacific, disasters are inevitable. Floods, cyclones, tsunamis, fires, earthquakes. Whatever the disaster, if it strikes your home, there is a way you can be prepared. A go bag. A bag of essential items that could save your life in a disaster. You should pack your go bag now so that if there is a disaster, you can pick it up and go. The things you should put in it are water, food, medicine, toiletries, hand sanitizer, and a first aid kit. You should also pack a radio, blankets, protective clothing, garbage bags, a light, small tools like a knife, a can opener, and a whistle to alert emergency services. Oh, and don't forget copies of important documents. Disasters may be inevitable, but the loss of your life or your family are not. Prepare your go bag now and stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia.
And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. Tune in again 6 a.m. PNG time tomorrow and also 5 p.m. PNG time this afternoon. Up next, it's your news. After that, it's News Your Daily. Till next time, o tō whātou. This is Pacific Beat, yours in the Pacific.